Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, German Wings and the Mental Health Paradox. You know, advocates resist restrictions on people with mental illness, from flying planes, from owning guns, because they say it'll scare people away from getting treatment when they need it, leading to more risk. Others say the risk is not in asking questions, or the risk is in not asking the questions. We will talk about that later in the program. Also today, David Isay, founder of StoryCorps, he just won $1 million prize from the TED Talks people, and he's using it to create a StoryCorps app. He'll tell us how you can use it. And John Ronson today, who you may know from This American Life, on his new book about public shaming as a way to good behavior. Is our tabloid culture already that? Anyone see Harvey Weinstein on the cover of The Post today? But first, the governor of Connecticut has a message for the governor of Indiana.
I won't allow any of our citizens in Connecticut to face discrimination in other states, at least without a fight. We can't stand idly by in Connecticut while a class of citizens in our country is forced to face the laws that label them a second-class citizen.
Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy, who has signed an executive order banning state funding of trips to Indiana because of the Hoosier State's new law, so-called Religious Liberty Protection Law, which seems aimed at allowing discrimination against gays and lesbians. Angie's List, Yelp, and other companies also say they may boycott Indiana now because it seems to be taking this step specifically for government to enable discrimination. In a minute, we'll hear an almost unbelievable exchange on the issue between ABC's George Stephanopoulos and Indiana Governor Mike Pence on this. First, let's welcome one of Daniel Malloy's proudest constituents. We will name her the Connecticut resident most likely to appear as a Brian Lehrer Show guest on Legal Affairs, New Haven's own Emily Bazelon, New York Times Magazine staff writer, member of the Slate Political Gabfest, and general legal and political nutmegger. Hi, Emily. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Do you all really love nutmeg so much that they nicknamed the state after it?
I have no attachment to nutmeg and don't really get that whole thing, but I'm sure that just shows that I wasn't born in the state of Connecticut.
I guess. And by the way, and this is relevant to the clip we're going to hear, what's a Hoosier? Do you know?
I mean, isn't that something to do with the basketball team in Indiana? Isn't that
well? They call
part
it
the
that.
Genesis?
So no. Indianans call us up and tell us, because I'm ignorant, and now I know Emily Bazelon is ignorant, of what a Hoosier actually is. What is the reference? Indiana is the Hoosier state, and we're about to hear how incredibly nice all Hoosiers are from the governor. They might even be nicer than people from Minnesota, and that is not easy. But I don't actually know what a Hoosier is. So somebody call and tell us, 212-433-WNYC, if you come from Indianapolis or the fictional town of Pawnee or wherever. You know, Emily, I didn't know what a Buckeye was either until I went to grad school in Ohio. And then I learned that it's a tree with leaves that look incredibly a lot like marijuana leaves.
Well, at least we got one of the state emblems right, because I feel like I'm failing at these trick questions this morning.
They made these stickers, just a picture of a buckeye leaf that college students would put on their notebooks and backpacks that I think were designed to show Ohio pride and say legalize it at the same time, and nobody could tell the difference. So
that sounds like an excellent kind of Midwestern form of protest. Nice and polite.
Do we have our answer yet? Is somebody on the board to tell us what a Hoosier is? Should we get this out of the way? Not yet. All right. So let's play this clip. This will give all you Hoosiers another 3 minutes to get ready to call up and explain. And then, Emily, you'll explain to us what's really going on with this law. So here's a kind of amazing exchange on ABC this week on Sunday, and this went on with this intensity for minutes more than we're going to play, between the host, George Stephanopoulos, and Indiana Governor Mike Pence, a strong proponent of the new Religious Liberties Law. We pick this up in progress when Stephanopoulos is pressing Pence for a yes or no answer on whether the law enables discrimination against lesbians and gays.
So when you say tolerance is a two-way street, does that mean that Christians who want to refuse service, or people of any other faith who want to refuse service to gays and lesbians, that it's now legal in the state of Indiana? That's a simple yes or no question.
George, the question here is if there is a government action or a law that an individual believes impinges on their religious liberty, they have the opportunity to go to court, just as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that Bill Clinton signed allowed them, go to court, and the court would evaluate the circumstance under the standards articulated in this act. That's all it is. And when you see these headlines about Indiana, a license to discriminate in Indiana, and it just, I'm telling you, George, it is a red herring, and I think it's deeply troubling to millions of Americans, and frankly, people all across the state of Indiana who feel troubled about government overreach. This isn't about disputes between individuals. It's about government overreach, and I'm proud that Indiana stepped forward. And I'm working hard to clarify this. We're reaching out to business leaders. I'm pleased to be on your show speaking across the country on this.
I'm trying to get that same clarity. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is that someone could use their religious faith as a defense against any kind of a suit brought there. But let's try to get to that clarification you're talking about. Yeah. One fix that people have talked about is simply adding sexual orientation as a protected class under the state civil rights laws. Will you push for that?
I will not push for that. That's not on my agenda, and that's not been an objective of the people of the state of Indiana. And it doesn't have anything to do with this law. I mean, George, Bill Clinton signed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in 1993.
But let me try to get to this clarification. One suggested fix to the law would say that this chapter of the law does not establish or eliminate a defense to a claim under any federal, state, or local law protecting civil rights or preventing discrimination. Is that the kind of clarification you're talking about?
George, look, we're not going to change the law, okay? But if the General Assembly in Indiana sends me a bill that adds a section that reiterates and amplifies and clarifies what the law really is and what it has been for the last 20 years, then I'm open to that.
Final question, final yes or no question, Governor. Do you think it should be legal in the state of Indiana to discriminate against gays or lesbians?
George,
it's a yes or no question.
Hoosiers don't believe in discrimination. I mean, the way I was raised in a small town in southern Indiana is you're kind and caring and respectful to everyone. Anybody that's been in Indiana for 5 minutes knows that Hoosier Hospitality is not a slogan, it's a reality. People tell me when I travel around the country, gosh, I went to your state and people are so nice. I mean, this is not about discrimination. This is about protecting the religious liberty of every Hoosier, of every faith. And we're going to continue to work our hearts out to clarify that to the people of Indiana and the people of this great country.
Yes or no, should it be legal to discriminate against gays and lesbians?
George, you're following the mantra of the last week online, and you're trying to make this issue about something else.
Oh, boy. George Stephanopoulos and Indiana Governor Mike Pence on ABC This Week. Legal Emily Bazelon from the New York Times Magazine and the Slate Political Gabfest with us. Okay, Luke in Midtown, what's a Hoosier?
Hey, man, first time caller, long time listener. I believe a Hoosier is a type of cabinet. Also, you know, like bakers use them, I think, primarily, or they did.
A type. Two people are calling to say a type of cabinet. Richard in Tarrytown, what's a Hoosier?
Hi. Hoosier, the name originated back when the area around Indiana was being formed, and it's true that Hoosiers are known for their hospitality, but back then, when somebody would knock on the door, they would say Hoosier. There were a lot of French. that's what I grew
are
up
you
out
making
in Indiana.
Are you making this
no,
up?
No. I grew up out in Indiana, no. And that was what we were told.
So it's just the dialect for who's there? Hoosier.
It's a dialect for who's there, right.
By the way, Emily, Wikipedia says it's a matter of debate within the state, and people call themselves Hoosiers there by around 1840, but nobody really knows where it came from. So what you said originally is right. It just has come to mean someone from Indiana with no actual independent meaning.
That's kind of crazy. crazy, but okay.
So there you go. We've settled that. So now, Emily, yes or no, as George Stephanopoulos might put it, does Indiana's new law give legal cover for businesses not to serve gays and lesbians on religious grounds?
Yes, pretty much it does. If you think that it's discrimination for a wedding photographer or a cake maker to say, I only do weddings between heterosexual couples, then this law will make it easier for them to win a case like that. It's not a slam dunk. A court is still going to have to do a balancing test. But what's different about Indiana's law from all the other religious freedom restoration acts out there is that it explicitly says that it applies to disputes between private parties that don't involve government action. And so that's what's, to me, a little confusing about the way Governor Pence continues to describe this law. It just seems to me that it's at odds with the law's actual text.
Does it give people permission to discriminate against Jews or Muslims on religious grounds?
Potentially. I mean, you know, the proponents of laws like these, what they say is, look, we are just trying to give a small number of tiny businesses that are run by devout Christians who don't believe in being involved in a gay wedding, see marriage as a form of Christian sacrament. We are just trying to give them a way out of serving these customers. It's just this little carve-out just for these few dissenters. Don't worry about this. But when you pass a law that talks about how the government can't substantially burden someone's religious beliefs unless certain tests are made, and then that also applies to disputes between private parties without government action, well, you might create a law that has more license in it and that gets used in unexpected ways. We just don't know.
Does this law give landlords permission? I mean, so much of the conversation seems to revolve around photographers and cake makers who don't want to get involved with gay weddings, which seems like a relatively small thing. You're going to find a bakery, you're going to find a photographer who's willing to do it, no doubt. But does it go beyond that? Does this law give landlords, say, permission not to rent to gays, or employers permission not to hire gays on religious grounds?
Well, I think it could. I mean, again, the backers of the law say this is really just about weddings and not people. But I don't see, based on the actual text of the law, what the protection is against a landlord who doesn't want to rent to a gay couple, married or not married, or what about an adoption agency that doesn't want to allow gay parents to adopt,
That's another one, married or not.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, it just seems like there are these other hypotheticals out there that, okay, maybe we don't have that case yet before us, but that doesn't mean someone couldn't bring it.
And what's the religious test? Do you have to belong to the Catholic Church or some other that explicitly has doctrines stating that a homosexual act is a sin?
No, I mean, I think courts in general are very wary of telling believers what they think and whether their beliefs are truly felt. So courts will generally say, like, okay, you say you're part of a religion, you have these beliefs, we are going to go with your interpretation of that and then proceed from there about judging whether we think this law or this issue creates a substantial burden on your freedom to exercise your religion.
Now, almost half the states have such laws. Governor Pence mentioned that Illinois State Senator Barack Obama, when he was an Illinois State Senator, voted for such a law that passed the Illinois legislature unanimously, and that Congress passed such a federal law in the 1990s, signed by Bill Clinton. Was it the same law?
Well, sort of. So it didn't have this provision in it about disputes between private parties. And at the time, we weren't talking about businesses refusing to serve customers or grant particular benefits like insurers paying for contraception the way that the business Hobby Lobby did, which won before the Supreme Court based on one of these religious freedom claims. So the context was different. The idea about businesses not serving customers or not providing benefits wasn't front and center. It just wasn't there at all. And instead, what Congress was responding to was a Supreme Court decision about whether a member of a Native American tribe could get in trouble for taking peyote at a religious ceremony. So that was a very different context. Liberals and conservatives joined together about protecting the rights of minority religions against what seemed like sort of irrational or not really justified majority rules. That's really a different setting than this current context, which is essentially a kind of rear guard action against gay rights and gay marriage.
Is it fair to say there's a conflict of liberties here? To take this at its most serious level, I mean, it sounds to me from everything I hear like this is just a cover to allow businesses to not participate in gay weddings or not rent to gays, or basically this is a cover to allow people to discriminate against gays in Indiana because that's the issue of the day and that's the religious liberty that this is all intended to protect. Tell me if you have another impression. But
no.
To take the,
go ahead.
No, actually tell me if you have another impression because that's really the bottom line political question here.
I mean, that is certainly the context for these laws, and the people who've been pushing for them the hardest are saying, we want to protect these Christian businesses that don't want to serve gay couples. That's the agenda here. So I think to, you know, pretend otherwise is a little silly. It is also true that they are tapping into this broader tradition of protecting minority religious freedom. But in this particular moment in history, what they're trying to do is use that as a lever that Christian businesses and perhaps individuals can hold on to kind of against the growing gay rights movement.
So there's a conflict here, to take this at its most serious level, a conflict of liberties. People claim the right in a free society not to be discriminated against on the basis of their race or religion or sexual orientation or gender or disability. That's what ending Jim Crow laws was about when it came to race, about freedom, liberty, to live as a whole equal person under the law versus the freedom to practice your religion in a free society the way you see fit. And if that means not enabling sin as you see it by renting to gay couples, let's say, who will commit sinful acts on your property, that's also freedom, I guess. Is that
right?
That's a conflict of liberties.
Right. So I think to sort of give the religious argument its due, what people of faith are saying, and we're talking about a small number of people, is it goes against my religious beliefs to provide these services, and I don't think my refusal is a big enough infringement on someone else's liberty to really matter all that much, or at least like my religious liberty kind of trumps your right as a gay person to be treated the same as everyone else. Go, you know, get your services elsewhere. So, you know, for me, that's tough. Like, it, to me, recalls the sit-ins of the 1960s, and I don't think I certainly hope we wouldn't have bought the argument that, you know, black people shouldn't have succeeded in sit-ins at drugstore counters if a drugstore owner had said, I'm sorry, I have a Christian belief against serving a black person. Like, we have a tradition in this country where if you are a business open to the public, you serve everybody, and you don't discriminate based on race, religion, ethnicity, and we are, as a society, adding sexual orientation to that list of protected categories. That's what this fight is about.
We have a few people calling in to defend the law. Let me take one. Mike in Jersey City. Mike, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yeah, hi there, Brian. I'm pull over to the side of the road. I'm not moving now.
Okay, good.
I think the problem here is that, you know, in all due respect, your guest is a little bit ignorant. Now, as a qualifier, one of my groomsmen at my wedding in the mid-'80s was a guy named Ortez Alderson. He was very involved in ACT UP. His partner, Arthur, was invited to the wedding. They participated in the rehearsal dinner. So I'm not coming at this from a homophobic viewpoint at all. Okay, but the reality is that there's a reason that freedom of religion is the First Amendment. It's an important value, and the concern that this particular law is intended to address has been articulated by people, by, you know, Christian homophobes, if you want to put it that way, for a long time. This isn't the flavor of the day. And the notion that somehow the response isn't, well, you know, this is a knotty issue, and we need to work out the details of how this works because we kind of want to try to protect people's religious freedom. Oh, that. while at the same time not just giving people a chance to arbitrarily discriminate. And contrary to what your caller said, I'm pretty sure Christianity has never said it was okay to discriminate against blacks, by the way. That's simply canards. You should retract that. But I think it's the standard, unfortunately, approach that the gay community has taken to a lot of things these days, or at least some members of it, where there's nothing reasonable to discuss. It's all black and white and good and evil. And I think that does a disservice to all parties.
So, Mike, are you saying, yes or no question, that it should be legal for private businesses to discriminate against gays and lesbians on the basis of their sexual orientation?
No, what I'm saying that it should be legal for individuals, okay, acting out of their religious convictions to get exceptions to doing things that are opposed to their religious convictions. Consider, Brian, if somebody is a conscientious objector, they don't make them serve in the army, or if they do, they keep them out of combat roles. If we can accommodate religious beliefs for something as serious as national defense, I'm a little bit hard-pressed to figure out, to see that we can't figure out a reasonable accommodation so that gay people can buy wedding cakes for their weddings without forcing Christians to do the equivalent of, you know, the Maccabees being forced to eat pork by the Greeks, you know?
But what if somebody said, Meyer, and people did say this in the Jim Crow era, it's against my religion to serve these people. Not that there were big, you know, church doctrines against it, but people could do this. This is a matter of individual religious conscience, as Emily was explaining. And you use the military, certainly in the draft days, you didn't have to be a member of any religion. You could just decide that it was your personal conscience that you wanted to keep you out of the military draft. So somebody could say, well, I don't want to serve black people. I don't want to serve Jews. My religion tells me I don't want to be in contact with those people.
Well, Brian, I think there's a slight, this conflation of racism and homophobia. I'm not in favor of either, but I think that's a false comparison.
Why? Okay? Why? They're both sort of the status of the individual's being.
That's nice. However, I don't agree with them. There's a lot of things I don't agree with that are in the Bible, the Quran, etc. But the fact is that these religions have had prohibitions against homosexual behavior. I don't agree with that, okay? I'm obviously not a fundamentalist Christian who believes in the literal interpretation of the Bible. But there's nothing in those books, having read them cover to cover, I can tell you, that say that it's okay to discriminate against people based on race or ethnicity. It does, however, say, and again, I'm not agreeing with the tradition, I'm just simply observing the fact that's in the book, that these are considered violations of commandments.
Mike, I'm going to leave it there. I appreciate your call. Emily, what do you want to say to anything in my exchange with Mike?
Well, two things. I mean, I think the first is that the analogy between discriminating against people on the basis of race or religion and sexual orientation, to me, holds up. And when you think about, you know, treating one group of people differently because of their status, that is a real action you're taking that is going to mean something to them about how they are valued as a group in our society. I just think that's kind of an inescapable conclusion. And I think you can understand that someone has a true religious conviction and also realize that the impact, it can be a form of discrimination. That's why people are butting heads here. The second, just quick point, is that there was a Supreme Court case in the 1980s in which a Christian university called Bob Jones had a rule forbidding interracial dating. And the IRS wanted to take away their tax-exempt status because of this, you know, essentially racist rule. And there was a huge fight over that. So the notion that, you know, we haven't had these same fights about race or other categories in the past, it's just not false, and it's just not true. And I think the reason it seems so inconceivable now is that as a society, we have a consensus that people don't get to freely discriminate on the basis of race. And we are approaching that same consensus about protecting gay people against discrimination, but we're not quite there yet. And essentially, I think this caller is arguing that it's in the Bible. And if it's in the Bible, people should be respected for being able to do what they want. But it's in the Bible. It's not a legal rationale in American law. We have to have something else to justify a law like this.
So what do you make of your governor there in Connecticut issuing his executive order? For people just tuning in, we played a clip of Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy earlier saying that he doesn't want people from his state being subject to discrimination by another state, so he's not going to allow any more taxpayer-funded trips by people in Connecticut to Indiana. That is, the government won't pay for trips to Indiana so as not to enable the discrimination inherent in this law. What do you make of that there, and is that part of a larger movement to boycott Indiana that you see beginning?
I mean, it is, actually. There are a whole bunch of businesses that are not going to send folks to Indiana or are saying they're not going to do business in Indiana. And I just can't believe how rapidly this shift is occurring. I mean, this is happening as Georgia is debating one of these bills. We've had moves to pass laws like this that, you know, are in this context of being a backlash against gay rights in several other states. So in one sense, you know, if I was Mike Pence, I would feel like, geez, why are you singling me out, my state out? On the other hand, I think we're seeing a sort of, you know, true divide in the country. And what is most striking to me has been the powerful response to this kind of anti-gay rights move. It's much more powerful, I think, nationally speaking, than the effort to try to kind of push back against the expansion of gay rights.
So, for example, what it could mean practically with respect to Daniel Malloy is that Final Four of women's college basketball is scheduled to take place in Indianapolis next year. So that would be a year from right now. And the University of Connecticut, as any basketball fan knows, is almost always in that Final Four. They reached this year's in another blowout last night. State school. Could they not go?
They could not go, or the NCAA could decide to move the tournament next year, which I think, you know, if there was really enough of a groundswell of support among states and their schools, that's the kind of blow to Indiana that we might see. Now, it would be a little ridiculous if they moved it to a state that has a similar Religious Freedom Restoration Act in place and no provision protecting gay people against discrimination. So in that sense, again, Indiana is being singled out here. But, you know, I think this is one way in which businesses, other states and politicians can express their values.
One more call. Darren in Manhattan with a legal question. Hi, Darren. You're on WNYC. Darren, you there? Oh, Darren fled or his phone broke. I'm going to ask the question that he was going to ask, at least as it's printed on my screen, which says, businesses can't be Christian. A person can, but a business can't. So how could a business be protected under the law from refusing to provide services to an individual on religious grounds?
Oh, that sounds like such common sense, and I really wish that Darren was right about this. It is what I thought until I, too, believed this until the Supreme Court's ruling in the Hobby Lobby case. And, you know, in many contexts, to be fair, the legal concept of personhood includes corporations. But until Hobby Lobby, the court had never said that in the context of freedom of religion, that a business as opposed to an individual had a right to freedom of religion. But that's what Hobby Lobby says. It talks about closely held corporations, which sounds sort of technical, but really just means like anything that's not on publicly owned on the stock market. It is the vast majority of American companies. They all now have religious freedom rights as companies, not as people. I don't get it either.
The Supreme Court is also about to decide, though, any month now, because they take their sweet time, on whether the U.S. Constitution offers an implicit right to gay marriage. And if it decides yes, it does, would that negate the Indiana law in this respect?
No, it wouldn't negate the Indiana law, because we would still have this question about what can states do to kind of referee the question of what state citizens are required or not required to do surrounding not just gay weddings, as you were pointing out earlier, but many facets of same-sex relationships. And so if anything, I think it will sort of intensify these fights over state religious freedom acts, because if gay marriage is national, then it's going to be in every state of the country. You know, Indiana does allow gay marriage based on a recent court ruling, but we still have a whole bunch of states that don't.
There is, last thing, a David Brooks column today in which he argues that, of course, he believes in equality under the law for gays, but this may not be so smart a fight for the gay rights movement to pick, that this changes the conversation from gays and lesbians being discriminated against to gays and lesbians trying to push the law to stop bakers and photographers from, you know, being able to say no to something as small as working a gay wedding. And so it kind of is not the best way to bring people along. And he didn't make this analogy that I saw in the column, but I think some people have brought up what Ruth Bader Ginsburg has said about Roe versus Wade, that she believes in it, but that it may have enhanced the backlash against abortion rights because it seemed to impose this in a way on the entire United States without bringing people along step by step. And look how successful the gay rights movement has been in bringing people along without this kind of coercion. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it's the sort of minimalist argument. Look, what's the real harm here? Who cares? Let these businesses go. It's all not going to last very long anyway. I'm somewhat sympathetic to that as a sort of political matter. Backlash is something I always worry about, and this is one way of addressing it. Andrew Sullivan, who's a very prominent gay writer and blogger, made a similar argument several months ago in which he said, look, like, we're not about, you know, essentially like forcing ourselves on these businesses. Go find another cake baker / wedding photographer. The problem is, I think, if you start thinking about landlords or adoption agencies or other more serious forms of discrimination, it starts to seem like, really? Gay people are supposed to put up with all of that? And I guess even in the context of, you know, the cake or the wedding photographer, if a particular individual or couple feels deeply insulted by being not welcomed by that business, then it's, I think in the end, it's like up to them whether they want to make a legal issue out of it. So, you know, the movement as a whole could sort of discourage these kinds of actions. And I don't think that the gay rights legal movement, you know, has made this front and center. It has not been their big issue. But when particular individuals feel, you know, I think in a deep way, insulted and offended by these kinds of actions, I'm not sure how the movement is supposed to tell them to just, like, stuff it.
Emily Bazelon, New York Times Magazine staff writer and participant in the weekly Slate Political Gab Fest. Emily, thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, German Wings and the Mental Health Paradox. Stay tuned.